closer.
Don't believe what I just saw!
I'm a man! I'm 40!
This is John Sheezer. I'm here.
Eric Marino.
Eric.
No, I gotta tell you about the Clippers. I'm an
addict. Sportsaholics, I gotta.
Let's just hope this shit doesn't go viral.
Okay. On a hoopy dooey. Bop, 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 bop. Goodbye, Valley, from a Sally and me. Bop, 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 bop. Well, to keep Sally happy, I do all I can.
All right, and welcome back to Sportsaholics episode number 152. Of course, no whistle, so that means no Eric. Again, Eric is in New York, writing on Saturday Night Live. Let that sink in. That voice that you've heard all these years is now responsible for humor that's being digested by millions and millions of people. And I know they just had Tiffany Haddish on this past weekend, which apparently was a very successful weekend. I've got to download the NBC app and watch. I didn't watch it, but so again, we'll have the train whistle when Eric is back. Those are the rules. But this week's episode actually is fantastic. I've got a longtime friend, fellow comedian, incredible jump shot basketball wise, Brant Tobler, is on this week's episode. Grew up in Wyoming, long time, Rocky area Broncos, that fan. But anyway, really good comic, and I'm actually going to drop in a little bit of a sample of some of his stand-up. He's got an album coming out here in about a month or two, as well as a book that we'll get into. But Brant Tobler, very funny. If you haven't seen him, he's based in Denver now, but tours all over the country. So definitely go check him out. Plus, after you listen to his, like I said, I'll put in the sample of his stuff. So you'll listen to him and be like, yeah, that was funny. I want to see that guy. And then, that'll be that. So, like I said, episode 152 here. It's been a weird baseball week. I finished last week's episode or 151, not last week's, whenever it was. It's been a kind of a, I had a personal loss in the family. My grandfather of 97 years passed away. So I've been back and forth to Kansas City. I'm actually going back again this weekend for a memorial. Great man, awesome, lived a very long, healthy life, World War II veteran, a long list of incredible achievements. So, and then while that's happening, the Roy Halladay plane crash happens, and it's always weird when athletes pass away, and I don't know, it feels like it happens more frequently. I don't know if there's more sports or... for me, right off the top of my head is the Yordano Ventura incident from last, I want to say it was January 22nd or something like that. It's sudden, out of nowhere. I just remember I had some friends visiting, opened up my door to the bedroom, my buddy goes, hey, Yordano Ventura died last night. It's like, it's just out of nowhere. Or the Oscar Tavares for the Cardinals back in, was a 14 or... it's sudden. You're not expecting it. I want to say Corey Lytle. It's probably wrong, but there was a Yankees pitcher about 10 years ago that also passed away by flying their plane into a building in New York. I guess the lesson to be learned here, rich people, don't buy planes. I mean, for me, ever since when Curtis Strange died in his plane crash, which was, if you don't know, he's a really good golfer, turn of the century. That was for me. I'm like, I don't need the small plane. I'll ride in the big box with everyone else. I'm fine with that. Plus, it's more cost effective. I just don't see the risk reward. It's just not there. I mean, I guess it's luxurious in some way, but the Roy Halladay thing, that was like a single pilot. That just looked like a Lamborghini in the sky type of a thing. And his wife was just begging him not to buy this thing. But, you're 40. You got a couple, 40 million bucks. You're like, yeah, no, I'm buying the plane, honey. Sorry. And unfortunately for the Halladay family, they're entering a whole new chapter of their life as far as his sons, and I know he was a coach with them with baseball and other things like that. So, you know, tragic ending to Roy Halladay's life. A guy pitched a no-hitter in the playoffs with the Phillies, had a perfect game, two-time Cy Young Award winner. You know, it's weird. It's like will be missed only because he's – it's like I hadn't thought about Roy Halladay in years, probably 6 years, even though he only retired, you know, 4 years ago or whatever it was. It just – but he just dominated the game from, you know, that 04, 05 through – really, the Phillies, when they got their World Series in, what was that, 2008, I think. But and then a couple years past that. But, yeah, tragic ending, unfortunate. And just lesson learned here, but just don't buy a plane. Don't buy a hang glider. Don't buy hot air balloons. Don't buy anything that's going to get you thousands of feet up in the air unless it involves parachuting. And then even then, don't even really get into that as a hobby. Spending other things ending. Carlos Beltran retiring after 20 years. Kind of bittersweet for myself because, excuse me. You know, those were my youth Royals teams, that 98, 99, 2000. He was there, you know, rookie. I think rookie of the year. He was. There was a lot of hype around this guy. There was nothing really going on with the Royals. Right? I mean, we had like Jeff King and, I mean, we were the late 90s Royals, you know, early 2000 Royals. But it was sad when he left. I think he spent six years in Kansas City, seven, something like that. But you know, 20 years, finally got his World Series with the Astros, played with the Yankees, the Mets, the Cardinals, Astros, Royals, and I believe the Giants, and maybe even one other team. But definitely, I knew he was probably going to retire because earlier this year, and this is actually why I like the Astros as a team, they actually had a ceremony mid-season when they pulled him out of the right field and said, hey, you're just going to DH the rest of the year. They had a ceremony to actually bury his glove to, you know, like it was dead. I thought that was so funny and original. I hadn't heard of that before. So the Astros to me got like bonus points. And good for you, Houston, for winning not only this year. And I mean, we said it with the Cubs the year before. We didn't really say it with the Royals before that, but it looks like you got the makings of a dynasty, and it is incredibly hard to win a World Series, which makes what the Yankees did all those years ago, back-to-back-to-back years, even more impressive. But, that, I mean, it looks like they're going to be able to sustain. I mean, they've already been into the playoffs. Well, I know in 15 because the Royals played them. I'm not sure about last year. No, I think last year, either way. They're going to be back, and they're going to be good for a while. So good for you, Houston. I mean, I know the Deshaun Watson leg injury, your football screwed. That sucks. That's football. But you got a World Series, you know, especially after the hurricane and some little bit of a distraction. I know all the people down there that lost a lot, like some, you know, all their possessions and everything. It's definitely a nice distraction for all of you guys, especially because the Astros had never won a World Series, and they've been a franchise for 50 something years, and just they were really good in the late 90s, early 2000s. I mean, I know they got swept in the World Series against the White Sox, but they had a nice 6-7-8 year run with the Killer Bees, Biggio, Bagwell, and Bergman. But they just never could quite put it all together. And so just years and years and years and years and years of frustration for the Astros fans finally got there. So congratulations. And you guys look like you're set up, like I said, for, I don't know, at least 3 or 4 or 5 years. Well, from what I'm reading, you guys, your minor league stock too. Like you got guys somehow that still in your system, even after the Verlander trade. So whoever you've got scouting, good job. I mean, the Cardinals tried to hack into your stuff. I mean, let's not forget that, Cardinals fans. You tried to, oh, I was just testing out passwords and I just logged in accidentally. Then why were you testing out passwords with the Houston? Anyway, Cardinals are cheaters. But you know what? like I said, we got Brant Tobler, great comedian, great author, actually. His book is doing very well on Amazon. You can go pick up a copy. We get into all that in the interview. Real quick, guys, if you're in Southern California, please, San Diego, La Jolla area, go to Don Carlos Taco Shop on Pearl Street. Kitty Catty Corner from the La Jolla Comedy Store down there. Great tacos, friend of the shows. I can't emphasize enough just the hospitality, the good food. Again, that's on Pearl Street down in La Jolla, California. And also, if you need any shirts printed up for a family reunion, for the holidays, for Christmas, Hanukkah, basketball, softball shirts, whatever, go to unionpresskc.com. That's unionpresskc.com. They've always got specials going on shirts. They're quick turnaround, whatever you want to say. You get your shirts in like a week or so, really fast. Like I said, they've got some specials going, so go to unionpresskc.com. And one last thing, guys. Myself, this Thursday, the 16th, I will be at the Gilroy Theater the District Theater in Gilroy, California, doing a great show with a couple really funny comics. If you go to just my Instagram, all that stuff, just John Is Here Comedy. It's got all the information on that. But that's this Thursday. So if you know anyone in San Jose or Salinas or Monterey in the Bay Area, anywhere around there, just let them know about the show Thursday night in Gilroy, California, garlic capital of the world. The District Theater, doors at 7, shows at 7:30. All right, when we get back, Brant Tobler. Then I OD'd in Denver, and I just can't remember her name. I've brought it on myself, and I guess that I shouldn't complain. Doc says, son, you can't do any more of that cocaine. Well, she made me higher than all of those expensive things. But I OD'd in Denver, wish I could remember her name.
Now, all right, we are back and very lucky and happy to have Brant Tobler on right now. Brant, I first met you, I think it was probably 6 or 7 years ago in Las Vegas with Bert Kreischer. Do you remember that weekend at all?
I do. I do remember bits and pieces of it. It was an incredible weekend.
Yeah, it definitely was one of those, you know, let's get another drink, bits and pieces kind of a weekend. But right off the bat, like right when I met you, it was great because we were at like a sushi place and you're like, no, let's get out of here. Let's go over to this place. And You look. It seemed like you were just full of incredible advice, especially in Las Vegas. Like, assuming that was, let's just say, 2011 or 12, maybe. Were you in Vegas? Is that where you started?
Yeah.
Stand up.
So yeah, I started stand up there, and I lived there for 12 years. So I figured it out. It took me a long time, and I'll tell you what I figured out. You don't want to be there for more than 3 days. That is the best Vegas advice I have.
I would agree with that.
Get in, get out. It's not some place you want to spend a lot of time.
Now, how did one, I wanted to have you on for one, you're a great comic. Two, you're a huge sports fan. And three, you listeners, you just authored a book called Free Roll, which covers a lot of your time in Vegas and just kind of your crazy upbringing, and which is kind of what I wanted to talk about with the Vegas, because like you said, you were there for 12 years.
So it was a crazy thing. I moved there. My dad was in prison the whole time I was a kid, and then my dad got out, and I moved there to try to have a relationship with my father. And then I got a job working for these professional gamblers, which was the best job in the world, especially as a big sports fan. So my job was I would just carry hundreds of thousands of dollars, and I would run up and down the strip and bet on sports, whatever my bosses told me to do. So it was like a dream that I never even dreamed growing up in a small town in Wyoming. I never even thought, you know, most people don't even really know it's a job. I mean, your listeners probably don't even know it's a job, and it really isn't anymore. But at the time, it was the dream job as a kid that you know, loved sports to get paid to run around and bet on sports.
Now you're talking 2005 to like in like some.
No, it was probably 2002 to. It's probably 2001 to about 2010, I would say.
Now, so, and that's, you say that job probably doesn't exist. Is that just because of online betting or just how he's?
Yeah. So online betting really crushed it. And back in the old days, most casinos were independent. So everyone kind of had their own lines. Whereas now it's like three groups that, you know, there's the Caesars group, the MGM group, and I think either the Stations or the South Point. So there, you can't really get a lot of action as far as like, you know, as a runner. Now, this is before Twitter. This is before social media was really big. So let's say you went to a Royals game and you saw the starting pitcher get hurt or whatever. And then you would call me and then we would bet. Like back then there was stuff like that that we would get an advantage. Well, we didn't really bet baseball much. But let's say you went to a Chiefs game and you saw Hunt or Alex Smith get hurt in warmups or something. And you would back then you would call us and then we would. You know, then we would have a little time to get bets down before the line moved. So it was a lot of stuff like that. And then our guys, they built this program, a computer program that would simulate the games like 10 million times and then shoot out a number. So let's say the Chiefs are playing the Broncos. It's a Sunday night, November, weather conditions, you know, Osweiler's quarterback or whatever. So they had a – they were really smart guys, so – all that was like beyond me. It was I was just a dumb kid running around doing what they told me.
Right, right. You're just like, it was fascinating. Yeah, I'll take $58,000. I'm glad you trust
yeah,
me.
Yeah, it was fascinating. So, and it was really cool for me because, you know, they would tell me when something. You know, there was times when, you know, it wasn't that often, but there was times when they were like, "You should bet this," and those were usually right. And they didn't tell me. They didn't need to tell me why, and they knew I was just a dumbass, loudmouth. You know, 23-year-old, I would have told everyone, but there was times when they'd be like, hey, man, this game's going off in like 10 minutes. I would bet it if I was you. Now, I don't know if the game was fixed or what, but I'll tell you that the times when they told me, those games did pretty good.
That's a nice, like, hey, here's your Christmas bonus.
Every
so couple
they knew that, you know, it's a big trust business, so they knew they couldn't trust me, but I think they still cared about me, so they wanted me to do all right.
Now I was gonna ask, like, how did you like get into the job in the first place? Did they set a couple like small little trust things, then you like return the money or something? They're like, all right, you're trustworthy, or how? Like,
no, you know what happened was, so I when I got to Vegas, I signed up for a gym. There was only one gym on my side of town, and it was ridiculously expensive. It was like $125 a month to go there. And this is, you know, 17 years ago. So, but I was really good at basketball when I was younger, and it's too hot in Vegas to play outside. So I pretty much had to sign up for this gym. And then, I signed up for this gym and then I start playing and I start talking to them, and, you know, they were all guys in their 30s and 40s. And I was kind of the only young guy playing, and I was, you know, and the guy that ended up being my boss was, you know, super competitive. So he started trying to get me on his team a lot, and then we became friends. And then
sports.
Eventually he told me, then I started asking around whatever, because, you know, everyone drove Mercedes and everything. And I was like, I'm from Wyoming. Nobody has a Mercedes or Beamer or anything in the parking lot. So then I started asking around, and then they told me what was going on. And then I started really kissing this guy's ass, and I was like, can tell me who to bet, and he would always be like, kid, don't bet, you know. And then one day I finally convinced him. He said, all right, I'll tell you. And he took me in this like a secret little hallway, and he said, we're betting these four games, don't tell anybody in the gym, don't tell anybody, you know, because the gym was full of professional gamblers that would but everyone was kind of on their own, so it was still kind of a secret. And he said that, and then I ran home and I immediately told my dad, and we got every dollar we could, and we went and bet the four games that the millionaire professional gambler secretly gave me. And of course they all four lost, and we lost all of our money. And then I couldn't go to the gym for like a month because I just didn't have any money. And then when I finally went back to the gym, the dude saw me walk in and he's like, you know, where you been? I was like, I had no money. And he's like, did you bet those games? I was like, yeah. He's like, how was it bad? I said, yeah, I lost all my money. Then he's like, if it makes you feel any better, we lost like $850,000 that day. And I was like, nope, doesn't make me feel better.
Not at all. Not feeling
it. You guys
it.
Are millionaires. And then that day he invited me to go to lunch. And because they would always go to lunch, all the gamblers would go to lunch. And I would, you know, I was never invited. And it was kind of like a private thing. And then he's like, you want to go to lunch? And I was like, sure. Of course, I was broke at the time. I just wanted a free lunch anyway. And then when we went, I sat at the back table with this dude and nobody sat with us. And he just asked me questions for like a half an hour, just all about my life. I didn't know, which in hindsight, now I realize is like an interview. So then at the end of the questions, he's like, so what are you going to do, kid? I was like, well, you know what? I'm going to save up $1,200 and go back home and, you know, be with my girlfriend. Cause at the time I was working at this crappy casino off the strip, this place called the Klondike Casino. You wouldn't even know it. You couldn't even find it if you wanted to. And my job was to count money in the middle of the night. I'd have to get to work at 11 and then just pull all the change out of a slot machine and count it. It was just torture, especially when you're broke.
Oh, no, man. That's brutal.
So I told him this story, and then he's like, you know what, man? You work for me now. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, trust me, man. You work for me. If you don't like it or if you get to $1,200, you want to leave. And then he said, and I was like still confused. And then his right hand man was this dude named Tony, who was like a guy that almost made it to the major leagues and just like a really cool dude that everybody in the gym liked, and this big like 6'4" monster dude. And then he said, you'll go with him. And I got in his BMW and we drove down to the strip. And when I got to the strip, he gave me $20,000 and he said, go in and bet this football game. And I'll never forget, I walked in and I bet, and I had to bet Duke in football. And this is back when Duke didn't ever win. And I took
They still rarely do.
But this is when they hadn't won in like years. And he said, go in there and bet like Duke plus 37 against Florida State. And I was like, why would we do that? Duke's awful. And he was like, here's the first lesson of this job. Just always do what you're told. And I was like, all right. And I walked in there so scared, man. I had most money I had in my life was like $800. And, I just had that money and my hands were shaking, and I went and bet it, and they gave me a ticket. And then for the next like 2 weeks after that, he trained me on how to be a runner, you know, where to park, where to get in and out of the casino, to, you know, how to protect yourself because you're carrying all that money and you don't want to get robbed. And after 2 weeks, then I met him at lunch and he handed me a bag with like $120,000 in it, and he said, you're responsible for this money 24/7, 365. Go to work. And I went to work, and I had that job off and on, worked for him and other people. Because once you're in the gambling world, you know, then stuff happens, and I worked for other guys and different guys. But once everyone, you know, once you're in, you're in. And that's the only thing he ever told me is, like, all you have in this job is your reputation. When your reputation's gone, you're gone. And I was like, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, once you got your six-figure bank, you're in.
So it was crazy, man. I was living in a trailer. I'd come home at night, and I'd lock the door in my bedroom, and I'd put the money all out on the floor like it's like Halloween candy. I'd spell my name in hundreds or like make pyramids, and I would just play with it like a toy. It was because it's just crazy to have that much money just to hold it, and I'd just take pictures of it, just, you know, douchey stuff. But I was, you know, 21, 22 years old. So it was cool. And then, and just as a sports fan, it was like, it was a dream job, man. I was very lucky, and you know, it was just a miracle. All those times, I always say, what, my parents are idiots to let me, you know, I was a 5'11", 6 foot tall white kid in Wyoming that spent every day working his ass off like I was going to make it to the NBA. And I've always said my parents should have told me not to, but if I wasn't good at basketball, I would have never got that job. And I don't know what I would do. So it all worked out.
No, it's great. Basketball, you meet so many cool people playing sports, basketball or whatever. It's just like a weird, there's a bond there. So especially when you're good. And I've seen you, I played against you and with you, like when you've been on. And you can definitely tell you played.
I'm no good anymore. But when I was young, I was good. Now I start playing again out here in Denver, but man, it's I told myself the other day, I was like, it's awesome that I used to be a competitive asshole, and now I'm not. And I realized it's because I'm not any good anymore. So it's a little hard to be super competitive when you're no good. But now in my 20s, I mean, so when we started playing together, I was shit, 36, 37. But when I was 20 to 29, I was pretty good. And that's all I cared about. And I mean, I went to college to play in Phoenix, and then my dad got out of prison, and then I saw him, and that made me move to Vegas to try to have a relationship with him. The whole thing's – that's why the book's so great. I mean, I'm obviously biased, but the book and I don't want to give away the whole book, but then my dad steals $80,000 from me, and then I try to kill my dad, and I have to go tell my bosses that I'm $80,000 short. And then I get robbed shotgun, and then people die, and it ends. And it's an incredible book. We're trying to get it sold for a movie, so if you don't like books, the movie will be years away. But if you are looking for a good book, I recommend it. And it's on Audible. It's me reading it, which a lot of people have liked. So
that's free roll.
A little plug for the book, but I'm just very proud of it. I hate like plugging stuff, but this is the first time.
No, it's great. I mean,
I worked my ass off on it, and I'm really, really proud of it. So if you're looking for a good book, it's called Free Roll, just like the word free, and then roll, and I think you'll like it. It's on Amazon. I think it's got 90 reviews, and they're all 5 stars right now. So it's doing pretty good.
No, it's great. I mean, having known you for so long and just to see you, you know, put all the time and energy and effort into doing this, because it is an incredible story. And one that you've touched on, you know, on stage in your comedy as well. And so to get like a full detailed account of it is, you know, it's nice, man. I'm glad just as a fan of comedy and entertainment that you did that. And so,
well, thanks. I did do the story for This Is Not Happening for Comedy Central, the one about killing my dad. So it's supposed to come out in January. So if you don't like to read, or you don't, if you can't do 300 pages, there will be a short version of and it's a pretty incredible story about me trying to kill my dad the first time, and then the second time too. And
that's
little spoiler alert. Obviously, it didn't work because I wouldn't be on the phone with you. But it's. I think you'll find it. I think your listeners will be fascinated how a dumbass kid from Wyoming decides to try to kill his dad.
Now,
it was before Breaking Bad and Dexter and stuff. So you're going to be like, wow, that was an interesting idea. But in my head, I thought it was going to work perfect.
Well, I mean, that's the power. You know, as a kid, you're just, you know, when you think you're smart as hell, you're just really before, just a dumb fuck. Like,
I watched First 48. This looks like a perfect plan. And thank God it didn't actually work, because what I thought was a perfect plan was far from it. So crazy Vegas. But that's Vegas, man. I hate it, but it's a very important part of my life.
And, you know, chapter-wise, I'd say, you know, let's say that's chapter 4 or 5. I wanted to talk about the earlier chapters in Wyoming. And what was it like just growing up there? Was that in Sheridan, or were you in Cheyenne?
No, I was in Cheyenne.
Okay.
So I was in Cheyenne, and we, you know, I just played basketball all day. The misconception, well, it's not a misconception that Wyoming's just white people, but it's very white. But Cheyenne, where I grew up, I grew up right by an Air Force base. So but to most people's surprise, most of my friends were black growing up, and we spent all day playing basketball. And, you know, from the age we were 14 on, the park where we played was right by the base. So all those base guys that were, you know, strats, like 19 through 25, so we just spent all day trying to bust these old guys' asses, and they kicked our butts when we were 14 15 16. But then when we got to be 17 18 19, but we were playing for money and just like dumb. My whole life was just basketball, honestly, growing up in Cheyenne. There's not really much else to do.
I was gonna say, that's pretty much my adolescence, like from 13 14 15 you know, and on. It was just basketball. I mean, that was just Kansas.
Yeah.
You know, go to the backyard, go to the park. I mean, yeah, play for money every once in a while. If I could get someone that I really thought I could beat that was just overconfident, I'm like, yeah, I'll play it for $20. That's a safe
bet. We played I played soccer too, but it was just basketball. I mean, I really thought I was gonna be like an NBA star growing up, because I just spent so much time playing basketball. And then there's just really not much else to do in Cheyenne. Well, and I didn't drink or anything in high school, because I thought I was literally going to be like a pro athlete. So in where I'm from, you either commit to sports or you just get wasted. And a lot of my friends, you know, they made that choice to just start drinking the second they got to high school. And then I was lucky to have a senior kind of take me under his wing, and just an incredible dude. And he didn't drink or do anything, and so it made me easy. I wanted to be just like him. So
what was that dude's name?
A guy named Andy Pannell.
Andy, good man. I don't know a bad Andy. If you're gonna have a kid, dude, and you want him to be a good human, great. Name him Andy, because I don't know a bad Andy.
Yeah, he's a great. He's a soccer coach, and I always tell him, man, if I have kids, it's gonna be hard for me not to bring them wherever you were at, because you were the kind of guy I would want to coach my children.
Well, Cheyenne, I didn't even realize this until about 5 or 6 years ago. It's only an hour and a half north of Denver, right?
So, yeah, yeah.
Or 2 hours, something like that?
Yeah, about an hour and a half. It's about 100 miles. So, yeah, so we're all – and we have no professional sports in Wyoming, so we're all big Denver fans, really, you know. And then some people are Nebraska fans, because it's also – my house is about 40 miles from the Nebraska border. So, but it's mostly all you know, it's mostly all Denver fans, and then, of course – a few rebellious kids just root for the Raiders just because they hate the Broncos because they wanted attention. But
gotcha.
So I was lucky enough to have a small town, but then could still get to the big town, you know, because we'd come down here for soccer tournaments and basketball games and stuff. So
yeah, I had no idea until and then one day I was driving up through that area up until like the North Dakota area. And I was like, wait, we're already in Cheyenne. Wait, I was like, this is like a suburb.
Yeah.
It's like a suburb of, yeah. Of
well,
Denver.
It is growing that way. That's the crazy thing about sports in Wyoming is that everything is so spread out. So like we would, you know, we'd have 7-8 hour bus drives, which to go play in, you know, play basketball or soccer games, which now it seems like, you know, awful, but it was honestly like so much fun. It was, I mean, I would do anything to go back to those days, those 8 hour bus rides with my friends. Like we just had so much fun. So.
Oh, especially after like a big victory. I mean, just yeah. The level of excitement in the bus, everyone's rowdy. Coach gets on everybody, keep it down, yeah. Keep it quiet down. But he's all excited because he just saved his job, you know?
Yeah. Like, and we'd get up hotels and stuff. So it's like, those are the first. It kind of probably got me ready for comedy life, but man, I miss those days of, like you said, getting a big victory after a 7 hour, and then coach is happy. And of course, the other side of it, when you lose a game, that's a long bus ride home. But it was only for like the first 2 hours, and everyone's like, nah. You know, we were just kids. We were like, all right, we still got 5 hours to go. We've moped for 2 hours. Can we go back to talking about girls or whatever?
And that's what was great, because you had to talk. You were actually talking to people because. Yeah. I mean, there were Discmen. I mean, don't get me wrong. Yeah, people were listening to music. It wasn't that long ago, but there wasn't cell phones or any of that crap. So you were actually fucking someone was getting bullied and shit on the whole time. You know what I mean? Like, it's hilarious.
Yeah, the Discman would run out of batteries, you know.
Inevitably. So yes. 8 hours? You got to stock.
There's
like
no chargers or anything. So, yeah, no, it was, I mean, it was the best. It was something I will always cherish those times with just the camaraderie and just, you know, making fun of each other or just telling stories or goofing on people when they fall asleep. It was it was a cool to grow up in, you know, not my town's not super small, but in a kind of small town. Well, in a huge state full of small towns, it was cool because we got to travel all over the place.
Yeah, and that's a beautiful state, especially as you head west. You know.
There's some incredible parts. There's some also awful parts. But
I mean, yeah, that ultimately about a third of it at least looks like Kansas, you know.
There's some Kansas. I just made that Kansas drive the other day. I went to I woke up and I drove from Denver to Kansas to go to the Chiefs game, and I was like, God, this drive. The best part of the drive was the fog.
Just blocking out all the beauty.
To just look at the shit that's just a long drive. I was flying. Well, one point I was doing like 94, I got pulled over, but then the cop was cool. Always say you're a comedian, is my advice to your listeners, even if you're not.
Like, say something funny.
Gets me off. No, I was just like, people, I don't know. They just were like, he was like, I was like, oh, I'm a comedian, just trying to get back to Denver. I got a show. He's like, you're a comedian, huh? I was like, yeah. How do you like it? And then you talk about it for a couple minutes, and then,
like, wow.
All right, man.
Cool.
I'll check you out. Yeah.
Yeah, it's got me rent a car upgrades and hotel upgrades, and I never get a ticket.
You're right. It actually got me about 50% off an oil change in Springfield, Missouri, yeah, 2 months ago. I got the bill, and I'm like, isn't this supposed to be 37? And he only charged us 21. All right, cool.
Yeah, and that's the misconception is I'll always give you free tickets to the shows, and people are like, God, that's so nice. You sure I want to pay? I'm like, they want us to give away free tickets.
Right.
They just want an audience, but then they see a ticket that says like $35 on it. They're like, God, he gave us four tickets for $35. That's like $140. And in my head, I'm like, no, you were like people 37, 38, 39, and 40, and we needed you as a crowd.
We needed your two drinks also.
Yeah. So the bar doesn't care. You're just holding a seat, and they're charging you $7 beers or whatever. But I would give free tickets even if I was famous, but I still always am like, hey, man, I'll hook you up in that. And people are that just blows their mind.
Hey, they love to know the comic. Yeah, I know, man. Like we met earlier or whatever, or the instances. So what? Who was your favorite Bronco growing up? Like,
was Elway.
Always Elway
by far. Yeah, it was always Elway. Elway would come when I was a kid. They had the Wyoming Open golf tournament, and Elway came like 3 years. And one time, I actually got to meet him. And he gave me his golf ball, which I still have. So, which was like maybe like the first joke I ever made. I was like, "Hey, Mr. Elway, can I have your golf ball?" I was maybe 12 or something, and he was like, $20, kid." And I was like, "I'll send you a check next week." And then he just laughed and gave it to me, and I was like, "Ah,
the power." Joke.
I mean, it's not an incredible joke, but it was quick off the top of my head. So
that's, I mean, especially you didn't get starstruck. You held your own. He was like, wow, that was actually really clever.
Well, you know what's funny is I almost got killed because I saw that he was on the other thing. So I just ran across the fairway not realizing someone was teeing off. And, you know, luckily it was like a real golf tournament. So I was probably running across the fairway at like 130 yards from the box. And, you know, whoever hit it skied it over my head. But there was a definite yell of like,
hey,
it was like too late to yell four. I just heard it soar over, and the crowd like yell like, what are you doing? You know, and I had to get to Elway. So
he's
the guy. You know, one time Steve Atwater came, and they did a basketball, they did a charity game against the firefighters, and he picked me out of the crowd to go shoot his free throw, and of course I bricked it like a dumbass in front of what I was just telling you, all that hard work in basketball. And then I had the big moment and I bricked my free throw. But we're Bronco fans. It was torture to lose those Super Bowls. You know, I'm old, so that was my childhood of watching them get crushed in Super Bowls, and I would just cry and cry. But
one of the good things about being a Broncos fan, actually, you've got good times in the 80s, bad times, good times.
Bad
times in the 90s. You know, it's like, it seems like the franchise as a whole is able to adapt and just kind of to whatever style is relevant in the NFL and then dominate. Like, and
no, we're spoiled as Bronco fans for sure. I mean, even now that we're complaining, we suck right now, but we've had it pretty good. So it's hard to, you know, when you think of other fan bases, we've had some, you know, I mean, it sucks to lose the Super Bowl, but to get to the three Super Bowls those times, you know, those were, and the fourth one, even the time we got killed, those are fun seasons because we were very successful until that last game.
Right, up until the, I mean, you at least got to have a Super Bowl party going in. We're like, we could be Super Bowl champions.
Yeah. We're still playing in the last game, which is, and every time those games, you had to believe we're going to win, you know. I guess the first time, I didn't understand gambling or anything, but that Green Bay game, I think, was the one time when I didn't think we would win. And then, of course, we won. And then I knew we'd win the Atlanta one. Then I thought for sure we'd win the Seattle one, which I couldn't have been more wrong about, which I was at, which was the ultimate torture. I've had some bad luck. So the last couple games, I went to the Giants game a couple weeks ago, which was awful. And then before that, I went to the home opener this year, which was great. They won. But before that, I flew back to see Peyton break the record against your Chiefs, and I had sideline passes, the best tickets I'll ever have. And then that's like the game Peyton threw four interceptions and got benched for Brock Osweiler.
You're like, son of a bitch.
And then my boy Jeff Dye, who's the best friend in the world, got me a ticket to Super Bowl, the one against the Seahawks. We were four rows off the field. which was a crazy thing because I flew out to New York. He's like, if you just get to New York, I got you. He got me this ticket. It was probably $12,000 ticket. And the whole trip out, I was like, okay, I want to be respectful. The Broncos are going to kill these guys. So I think I want to be thankful that Jeff got me here, but I don't want to rub it in his face, but I still want to try to enjoy the moment. And
you want to be a fan, but a respectful, classy fan.
Needless to say, I didn't enjoy from the freaking opening snap safety. It was all downhill. But so, yeah, we're Bronco fans out here. And then, you know, the Avalanche had a big run there when they won the Stanley Cup. Everybody jumped on board. And, you know, most people are Rockies fans, just not a lot of Nuggets fans. We were all Jordan guys growing up.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Like with the Rockies, is that just coming waves too, like as they're good?
Yeah, well, now that they're good and now this new ballpark. Like I live across the street from Coors, which is the most – I'm so lucky that I get to live right here.
Oh, that's fantastic.
But it's become more – you know, the downtown scene. So when the Rockies are good, everyone goes. But then when they're not, it's still just like the coolest bar. So people are in on the Rockies and then – But Nuggets, it's always been, you know, we were all Jordan guys. And then a lot of times you go to Nuggets games and they'd be there to see Kobe, or I went and saw Iverson, Kobe, Garnett. I was always to see the opposing team.
Yeah. 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 Well, that's what's great about the NBA is that's the only time I've ever gone is to see a star. Like I want to go see LeBron this year because he's already fading. I mean, he already can't do stuff he could do 3 years ago. So I'm like, if I don't see him this year, it's just not even going to be. Like, I don't want to see the LeBron that averages 16 points a game. I want to see the LeBron that can still put in, you know, 28.
Yeah, I almost walked over to the game last night. It was the Thunder were here, and I was like, should I just walk over and go? But then I was like, I should go to the gym. I drank too much the night before. But it's cool to where I live. I can walk, you know, all three stadiums are within a mile of my house. So I really that's one of the reasons I moved from L.A. back here is – I can just go to, you know, I'll go see the Broncos play the Patriots on Sunday and tailgate with my friends. And
no,
awesome.
I've only been to Denver really through the downtown one time, but it was about a year and a half ago. But I just remember driving through and really being impressed, like with the Rocky Stadium right there, and just saying like people walking around everywhere. Because I lived in downtown San Diego for a couple of years, like seven blocks from Petco. And so I'd go to games all the time. It was great. I'd be like, oh, there's a game. All right. Yeah, let's go down there. You could get tickets for half off at the bar from the street guy that's always there every game. But there's a certain like energy that runs around.
Yeah.
Anytime you see, several thousand people in a Broncos or Rockies jersey, you know, it makes you feel good. You're like, all right, sweet. Yeah, let's do this.
Yeah, I got a – the other day, well, it was during the season, but I'm telling you, I could step out of my house and throw a baseball and hit Coors Field. That's how close I am. So the other day I saw Verlander, the Tigers were in town. I saw Verlander literally walk by my door and I said, what's up to him? I was like, you pitching today? He goes, no, I'm pitching tomorrow. I was like, okay, cool. I woke up. I had a long night. I woke up at like noon. It was like a 1:05 start. I walked over, got like a $10 ticket, sat in the bleachers, watched Verlander. Then I got tired and hot. Then I walked back to my house, took a nap during like the fourth, fifth, and sixth, followed the game on Twitter on my phone, and then just walked back over, watched the eighth and ninth inning.
Yeah.
Just like I was watching like a high school team that lived down the street. So it was like, and that was Verlander's last game. Then like the next day got traded to Houston. So it was kind of cool.
You pitched today? No, I'm pitching tomorrow. All right, cool, man. I'll see you.
It's just crazy to see him. Well, I just see this big guy coming by. These Gucci shoes, and like I was like this, and then I was like, oh, that's Verlander. He was just walking from the hotel. You know, I don't know where they stay. It must be close, but literally just walking by my front door. I was going out to get some food, and it was just him by himself. No one even knew. I was like, oh shit,
and
it was just cool.
And kudos to just not bother, you know, legitimately just be like, hey man, are you playing today? No, tomorrow. All right, cool. You know, not just nothing else.
Yeah. Then of course during the World Series, like, damn, I should have got a picture with him, but. I guess I'm glad I didn't bother him because he was walking and I literally just came out and he was walking by. So it wasn't like, I don't think he really broke stride. I said I didn't bother him at all. He just, no, tomorrow. I was like, all right. So it's cool to have all, and these are, you know, the teams I like. So it's cool to have your team.
Yeah.
You know,
really be right in the middle of anything and everything you would want to watch as a call, you know, as a Rockies area. You know, sports fan.
Yeah, so it's been, it's great. So,
Now, what about, like, have people caught on to the Pac-12 yet out there? I was going to ask you about that, like, with the Buffaloes just going, or the Pac-10 or whatever, or is that?
I guess. Boulder's such a weird town. Like, I mean, there's a lot of CU fans here in Denver because a lot of people went to CU, but I don't think, you know, I think it's more alumni go over there. No one I know is like, we should go check out a game. Whereas maybe during basketball, because the Pac-12 basketball has, you know, I think Arizona, USC, UCLA are going to be like three of the top 10 teams. So maybe I would go over for that. But
how far away?
It's just a Bronco world around here, honestly.
How far away is Boulder from Denver?
Oh, half an hour.
Really? That close?
Yeah, it's close. So
okay.
If you and I'm a Wyoming fan. So if I was going to drive to a game, I would, you know, go the hour and a half and go to Laramie and see a game. So I don't know. I'm surrounded by Wyoming people here, so no one really cares about CU. But I guess if you were like CU, you know. But it's when it comes to football around here, it's just
Broncos. Gotcha.
The Bronco world. Yeah.
Nice. Well, Brent, I appreciate you coming on, man, and
sharing
your story and talking some Broncos. I know they're down now, but within a year or two, that'll be, you know, they'll be right back.
Yeah. We'll get a quarterback next year. We'll be fine.
And if I'm ever in the Rockies during baseball season, we'll definitely have to catch a game because that's the stadium I want to check off.
Yeah, we'll go. We can go to any game you want. So
hell yeah,
anytime you're out here.
I've been to a Sky Sox game in Colorado Springs.
Oh yeah,
but never.
Yeah, that's not bad.
But never Rockies yet. But again, listeners, if you go to BrantTobler.com, that's BrantTobler.com, or Free Roll on Amazon. You can find all the links on the website.
Audible, Kindle, anywhere they sell books, you can find Free Roll. And if you live in any, I'm in Columbus next week, then Omaha, then Vegas, Boise, and then Phoenix, and then it's Christmas. So if you're in any of those cities, find me on Brant Tobler, and I'll give you free tickets.
Yeah, at Brant Tobler also on social media.
Yeah, Twitter, Instagram, all that. BrantTobler.
Sweet, man. Hey, appreciate the time. And
perfect. We'll talk soon.
I got kicked out of the casino in Vegas for the rest of my life. And I used to like to tell this story on stage, but then the casino found out, and they called my manager and my agent, and they said, if he keeps telling the story on stage, we're going to sue. So I can't tell you guys which casino I was at, but I will tell you guys that the lawyers at the Imperial Palace are fucking assholes. So I was at this random casino just hanging out, right? Me and my buddy went there because we knew this guy on the internet named Craig, and he had a list full of girls. And I happened to jam 200 roses in my pocket somehow. So let's go and get a hooker if you didn't get the Craigslist joke. I want to get a hooker, guys. I lived in Vegas for 10 years, and I'd never had a hooker. And I feel like that's part of Vegas, right? You see the Bellagio fountains, take a picture by that weird sign, you get a hooker. But I just love my grandma so much, and I never want to disappoint her. And I'll never forget when I was like 13 years old, she pulled me aside one day and she was like, Brant, don't you ever pay for pussy. Which was weird to tell a 13-year-old, but I guess it worked because it stuck with me my whole life. So in my weird head, I came up with a plan. I was like, if I just win enough money gambling, it'd be like the casino just comped the hooker for me. Like a total rewards hooker is what I was calling it, right? But I'm usually an awful gambler, but this was like my lucky night. So I start playing roulette, and I buy in for $100. After about 45 minutes, I'm up $1,800. And I turn to my buddy with me, and I'm like, holy shit, man, this is the best night of my life. And right when I said that, the pit boss came over, and I don't know if he's mad I was winning or if he was just a jerk, but he's like, hey, buddy, can't be talking like that. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, you can't be saying shit in my casino. I was like, dude, it's like 2 a.m, man. There's people doing blow and gambling and drinking. I can't say shit in the casino. He goes, I told you once, I'm not going to tell you again. You say shit one more time, and you're out of here. I was like, all right, that's fair, but since you just said it too, you say shit one more time, then you're out of here. He didn't laugh as much as you guys did. He, of course, called the security guards, which there's nothing I hate more in life than casino security guards. If you've ever been to that casino, you know what I'm talking about. They're all the same. Between 40 and 50, fat, fat sideburns, middle women. And they always travel in groups of five or six, right? So here comes five security guards just waddling over, carrying all their broken dreams. Because they want to be real police officers, but they run like a 26-minute mile and have like a fourth grade education. Here comes five of them, because I said shit in a casino at 2 a.m. So the first one goes, hey man, some kind of problem here? I was like, yeah, there's a huge problem. You dumbasses are talking to me in public. He's like, oh, really? Really, buddy? You want me to call the Sarge? You want me to call the sergeant? I'm like, yeah, call the fucking sergeant. I don't know how you become sergeant of casino security if you get like a shitty blazer and some batting gloves and tell 100 people where the bathroom is, but you get your sergeant, I said. So they call the sergeant and he waddles over with five more security guards. So now we have a sergeant and 10 security guards because I said shit in the casino at 2 a.m. So they take my Wyoming ID and they take it over to the sergeant. He's looking at it real close and he waddles back over and he hands me back my Wyoming ID. The first thing he says to me is, hey boy, where are you from? I'm like, I'm from Wyoming, sir. He's like, well, I don't know how you talk to your little sheep girlfriend in Wyoming, but you're not gonna say shit in front of women in my casino. And all the little security guards laughed, and I was like, you know what, sir? I never like to curse in front of women, but I do know a group of women that curses every single morning. It's your mothers when they wake up and go, my son is a 47-year-old security guard in Las Vegas. They didn't laugh and applaud like you guys did. He's like, that's it, smartass. Take your chips, go to the cage, and get out of here. But you guys know how it is when there's that many security guards. Big-ass crowd forms. I'm a performer. I see a crowd, I'm like, it's showtime, bro. You want to fuck up my hooker dreams? Here we go. So I look at my boy, I'm like, watch this shit. So I start walking towards the cage. And I have to walk by the roulette table where the whole thing started. And Pit Boss is just sitting there with a smirk on his face like he beat me. He's like, nah, we're not done just yet, buddy. I walk back to that roulette table. If you know anything about roulette, there's the wheel, and then in front of the wheel, there's like $100,000 worth of chips, right? So I get to the table, I reach in, I'm like, fuck it, I don't want this money. I stop the wheel while it's spinning, and I pull the roulette ball out in the middle of the casino. Casino goes dead quiet like I'm holding a bomb or something. Right? I don't know what came over me. I think it's like when you're a little kid, I was like, well, fuck it. If I can't play, I'm taking my ball. I'm going home. But as I'm holding this little white marble, I realize I don't want this piece of shit. And I look up and I see the pit boss looking all confused. And in all my drunken anger, I just reared back and I threw that roulette ball as hard as I could at the pit boss. Hit him right in the chest. This one gets a little blurry. Because those fat-ass security guards tackle me in the middle of the casino. I land on my face and chip one of my teeth. We wrestle around for like 45 seconds. My watch breaks. Somehow I lose a flip-flop. And there's five of these fat asses laying on top of me, and they zip-tie me up in the back. And when they stand me up, the casino goes crazy. Like, the older people are like, get him out of here. He's a nuisance. And the young people are like, holy shit, that was incredible. And they're like trying to high-five my shoulder as I one-flop to casino jail. So now I'm in casino jail for like an hour, which is way nicer than my room. I'm just sitting on this like beautiful leather couch talking shit to these guys. Like, do you guys really need to wear all the Under Armour and Nike wristbands? And where do we get the plastic badges? And what time does mommy drop you off for work in the morning? But then after about an hour and a half of talking shit to these guys, the real cops come, Las Vegas Metro. And I don't mess with real cops. I have respect for those guys because they do like real shit and keep us safe. Plus, they were huge. So these two big cops come in, and the security guards tell them the whole story, and the cops are like, all right, we'll take them from here. They take me out of the zip ties. They put me in real handcuffs. And I'm scared to death. I'm 23 years old. I've never been to jail in my life. And I can remember my legs just shaking as I stood there. The cops are like, all right, come with us. And we walk down this long hallway. They don't say one word to me, and I'm just getting more scared and more scared. We eventually get to this huge cargo elevator, and I get in, and I'm standing in the middle, and the two big cops come in. One stands on each side of me, like I'm a killer or something, right? I think I play for the Patriots or some shit, right? So we take the elevator down to the lobby, and the cops like, sit right here and wait. So I just sit at a slot machine and I just wait, and the two cops go about 10 feet away and they're talking. I'm just trying to figure out who's gonna bail me out of jail and what I'm gonna do. And I'll never forget, the big cop comes over, he's about 6'7", 6'8", one of the most intimidating dudes I've ever seen. And I'm just sitting there looking up at him, and he comes over and he stands over me and he looks down and he's like, hey man, just so you know, I've been doing this job 17 years and that is the greatest fucking story I've ever heard. So he said, what's gonna happen is we're gonna give you a ticket, but you don't have to worry about this ticket because we won't show up for court and the casino can't pay all those people to take a day off from work and go to court. So you're fine, just don't ever come to this casino again. So the next night, right? No, but the best part about it, if you come to my house in LA, like, in my office, I have a college degree, awards, pictures of famous people. No one gives a shit about any of that. The only thing anyone ever wants to talk about is this pink ticket I have framed above my desk from the Las Vegas Metro Police Department that just says, disturbing the peace, stopping live roulette game in progress, and hitting pit boss in chest with roulette ball. Which has done way more for my career than some bullshit-ass college degree, so... That is my Vegas story. Try to beat it tonight. I will tell you how to kill if you can't catch me.
I can't emphasize enough. Just go see Branton live. Very funny. I mean, apparently now you can see him regularly in Denver, but he's on the road all the time, putting on a really good show. He did a show that I put on last year during the All-Star weekend in San Diego. He, man, just crushed it. Just kind of, he does great. Clearly. I mean, you just heard it, but. Anyway, so go check him out, support, buy the book, do what you got to do. And then when his album comes out here in a month or two, go buy that. What's there? College basketball starting. I mean, yay. Look, I'm happy Missouri's good. Again, for those of you on the coast who give a shit about Missouri, that's fine. I grew up in Missouri. Norm Stewart, Stormin' Norman. I mean... Devin Booker, his dad, Melvin Booker, was the shit back when I was a kid. Anthony Peeler, you had Javon Crudup, you had the Haley twins, these 7-foot guys that were just awful, but they were twins, so that was a special thing. God, you had the guy with the bowl cut. What the hell was that? The guy that Tyus Etney made, Derek Grimm, I believe his name was. The guy that infamous Tyus Etney dribbles down and 3-point whatever and shoots over Missouri. I was listening to that in the car. Driving to Kansas City from Columbia, I remember as a kid listening to that right around Concordia, which is about halfway to Kansas City. For those of you truck drivers out there, but college basketball for me, you know, I'm kind of spoiled as a KU fan. It doesn't really matter until March, right? March Madness. But the fact that MU's back in it, hopefully they can just start something up here. Now they got the Porter brothers. Just get good, get some more recruits, just jumpstart the program. Just make the tournament every other year. It's the SEC. Basketball sucks. It's boring, aside from Kentucky, in the SEC. So just, I don't know, try, I guess. I don't know. I'm actually going to watch some Missouri basketball games for the first time, probably since Kareem Rush. No, I guess they were good like 4 or 5 years ago. Anyway. So, yeah, basketball, whatever. NBA, go see LeBron, man. This is the last, I think, LeBron year. He's starting to get punked by people. Just, you know, that new young generation doesn't respect their elders. And he's just, this is like his 17th year or something ridiculous already in the NBA. So his legs are fading fast. So if you get the chance, go see LeBron this year because – it's just going to turn into jump shots. Just that's going to be LeBron the last 5-6 years of his career, just outside jumpers. So, which is fine. You can say, hey, I went and saw LeBron. Like, I went and saw Jordan. But, I mean, he was 3-for-14 shooting, I think scored 12 points or something like that. It wasn't impressive. So, go see LeBron. But, all right. So, that's this week's episode. What did you learn? Episode 152 is now complete. If you're in La Jolla, San Diego, go to Don Carlos Tacos at Eat a Burrito on Twitter, social media at Eat a Burrito on Pearl Street in La Jolla. Go check them out. They're delicious. If you need a shirt printed up for Christmas, family reunion, Hanukkah, softball, basketball jerseys, whatever. Go to unionpresskc.com. That's unionpresskc.com and check that out. And then Northern California, Gilroy, this Thursday, the 16th of November, myself, a couple other really great comics at the District Theater in Gilroy, California, the garlic capital of the world. That's this Thursday, the 16th. Doors at 7. Shows at 7:30. District Theater, Gilroy, California. Guys, I ask one thing. Stay obsessed.